Biz Connect, the show that connects businesses in Kent to do business. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Kent Biz Connect, the radio show that promotes and connects businesses in Kent to do business with myself, Martin White.
And me, Brian Wakefield.
Brian, great to see you. And we have two fabulous guests in the studio today. To my right,
Terry Botfield. Hi, good afternoon.
Terry, great to have you.
And hi, Terry. And to my left,
I have Miguel Calabrese. Hiya.
Miguel, nice to see you. Thanks very much for coming. It's feeling a bit Christmassy out there, isn't it, everybody? What do you think?
So you just said, didn't you?
Yeah.
It's beginning to feel a lot like Christmas.
It's just hit me. It's literally just hit me.
It's just dawned on you.
Yeah, I've just realised that we've really only got this week and next week, haven't we? And then it's kind of, it's upon us.
Yeah.
So that's fantastic, isn't it?
What's made you start to feel Christmassy?
Oh, I've got this silly hat on today, haven't I?
And
I
noticed
Terry's got one of his many Christmas jumpers on.
Multiple Christmas jumpers, and not environmentally friendly, sorry.
So, yeah. I think we just need to get this week out the way, don't we, for obvious reasons. And we need to get a result that kind of makes sense for everybody, whatever that looks like, on Friday, and then we can kind of get into it proper.
Thursday?
Well, I mean, the result will be on Friday, won't it?
Unless you're like me and sit up all night watching it.
Oh, you're going to be doing that, are you?
Well, I'll try. Yeah. I think I lasted till about 3 o'clock last time and fell asleep and woke up.
Are you cracking open any fizz or...?
What, on Thursday?
Yeah, should we come round? Is there going to be a sort of a party atmosphere? Is it a bit like Eurovision when we count the votes?
Actually, I've just remembered, I'm not even there. I'm out on our footballers' Christmas do at the boathouse in Welling and then staying at a mate's house. So I won't actually get back until Friday. So you were right.
Okay, all right. Well, anyway, it is feeling Christmassy. It must be Christmas because I went to the Panto last week.
Oh, no, you didn't. No,
it's all behind me now, of course. But that was fabulous. I was at the press night launch for this year's Panto at the Marlow.
Which was?
Mother Goose.
Ooh.
Yeah, which was a lot of fun. Really enjoyed that. Great night. And then I had another party on Friday, which was nice, a sort of afternoon networking in inverted commas. Miguel, I know you've had your Works Christmas party.
We did, yes.
Have you?
On Saturday?
On Saturday, yeah.
Where did you have that?
We went to the Hilton in Dartford.
Oh, right, yeah.
A meal and drinks. It was a great evening. Nice team bonding, which is always nice.
Fantastic.
And, of course, it's a team event, so you get tax relief on it.
yes, I was going to ask about that.
We're going to talk tax, aren't we, later? We will be talking tax with Miguel later on, obviously. But I don't know, is there a trend for Christmas parties to sort of get earlier and earlier? They seem to be we're only at the beginning of December and people have sort of had their Christmas party already. It's very early, isn't it?
I think we tried to book later, but to be honest, we left it too late and then it was all fully booked.
So you have to get in early.
Yeah.
Yes, you do. I've got clients who are in the trade and they plan their Christmas menus in May, June.
Yeah, sure.
And then they market them early for kickoff, usually the 1st of December.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Because I remember my dad used to come home from work at Christmas, on Christmas Eve. He'd come home an hour early. An hour earlier than normal, but his Christmas party would have been that lunchtime at work, you know, in the civil service way back when. So
give him an extra half an hour for
But now it's kind of weeks before, isn't it?
So, well, I think there's a little bit of a little bit of that still going on, so you do have a Christmas party like we did on Saturday, but on Christmas Eve we'll close at lunchtime and go for a lunch as well.
Right,
so,
okay.
So it's a bit of both, really.
Yeah. That sounds great. Can I come and work for you?
Yeah,
that sounds like a lot of fun. If I want to go out on a Christmas party, I have to take myself out.
Well, it's a lot of fun at the moment because we've got our Christmas Advent challenge going on, which is quite exciting.
Yeah, yeah. Did you have some people playing Connect Four in the office the other day or something?
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't win. It was a bit rigged, I think, in my opinion. But today was... it was past the parcel, but you had to unwrap it with oven gloves on.
Oh, excellent. Yeah. Yeah, that won't be easy.
What, like
it?
The mitts?
The mitts. And it went round, and then the person next to you had two dice, and you had to keep doing it until they got a double. And when they got a double, it was their turn, and they had to keep going.
Oh,
around.
Excellent!
Yeah,
that
yeah.
and that, no doubt, is still going on.
It ended really quickly, to be fair, and it was because of someone waited. They just couldn't get a double. I think they was playing it, and then they waited for the last bit of wrapping paper and magically rolled a double. Yeah. So it was just opened up straight away.
Oh, it's a bit sharp, isn't it? Yeah. Bit sharp.
So who comes up with these ideas then?
So the team all get a day. A team member gets a day, and then it's their day to do what they like. Mm. So then they. Pick the game, they run the game, whoever wins then gets a prize.
Ah, so Connect Four just happened to be somebody's yeah. idea of fun on that day.
Exactly, yeah.
Great, okay. Well, look, I'm glad we've kicked off with some kind of some festive cheer, and I think we're going to try and keep the show a bit lighthearted and kind of and festive today, which is superb.
As much as possible, I think, yeah.
But at the same time, Brian, we have got some serious business to get through and some good news stories, I think, out there.
I think so, yeah.
So why don't you kick us off with one of those?
Well, we're not going to discuss traffic or Brexit today because it's Christmas. Mm. So, and there is another impending thingy going on Thursday, as you say. Which, but yeah, there's a couple of good things in the news. One of the things that caught my eye is, do you know Cook Frozen Foods in Sittingbourne?
I do.
Okay, so yeah, they specialise in hand-prepared meals and stuff. I don't know kind of who for or to what standard. However, they are currently full to capacity, so they're looking at a new 25,000 square foot facility on the Eurolink estate in Sittingbourne. Initially, it will create another 80 jobs, which has got to be good news. Mm. They expect it to be closer to 200 jobs over the next 3 to 4 years. Mm. So I thought that was good. And also, so it's a bit of a double-edged sword here, is that that's all costing around about 60 million quid, which is not an insignificant amount of money. Mm. And it's basically the funding is being provided by HSBC. So it kind of, I thought, yeah, it's good news. And also, it's good that banks are banks kind of prepared to invest and give money away again. Mm. So what do we think? I mean, we've got an accountancy expert here, so it'll have different views. And Terry's obviously a good local businessman as well. So, guys, what are your thoughts?
I think, Sittingbourne seems to be a sort of hub for food businesses at the moment. I don't know why. I don't know if it's transport or if there's kind of incentives for businesses, but that's really great for Sittingbourne. I think one of their challenges has got to be how are they going to find an extra 80 workers? Because I think it's at the sort of the semi-skilled and unskilled end of the employment marketplace where businesses are really struggling. And in Kent, we've got fruit growers galore. And they, you know, they're having to let crops
can't find staff.
Yeah, because they're having to let crops just kind of rot on in orchards because, you know, they haven't got anyone to pick it. So I think that's going to be a huge challenge moving forwards for businesses.
Well, why is that though?
Because I think the influx of people coming to this country to work has largely stopped.
Ah.
Because I think the reality is that other markets in Europe, continental Europe, have offered more favourable terms for people in terms of, benefits and social security and stuff like that. Germany's a great example. And if you're from Eastern Europe, perhaps, and you've got a choice of working in the UK versus Germany, and actually if you work in Germany, you can get home back to Poland for the weekend. I know what I'd rather do, frankly. I'd rather work in Germany. So I think continental Europe has become more favourable as a kind of as a market for people to work. That's certainly got something to do with it. And then, of course, we've had all this uncertainty around Brexit. And what does that mean? And I think, you know, employers out there at the moment are kind of screaming their heads off because they're saying, well, you know, what is Brexit actually going to look like for us on an employment level and our ability to get people to actually do the jobs that we need
them
to do?
We have no idea.
Well, we don't, and they don't, and that's the whole point, isn't it, McGowan? You know, nobody knows.
Uncertainty is what's causing most of the problems out there today. It's just not knowing what's around the corner. You've mentioned employment. The biggest complication we see at the moment is VAT. Nobody knows exactly what's going to happen after it's done, and HMRC are sending out guidance, but it's not exactly step by step to help you through it. So,
what are they talking about with VAT then?
Well, one of the main steps they're telling everybody is that you need to register for an EORI number, to get on the European register. But and then it's summarized, it's just like, now sit and wait. Unfortunately. Mm. There's only so much you can do, because of depending on what way it goes, there'll be a different set of tasks that need to be done.
I think the challenge for businesses, large and small, and people say, well, small businesses, and most of them in Kent, you know, are small businesses, really shouldn't be involved in Brexit. They don't exit, they don't actually export anything. Mm. But actually, they do actually. They can be directly impacted by what's happening, because the trade trickles down from larger businesses to smaller businesses to people employed in businesses, and they spend money. And I think one of the issues around all of this is the uncertainty word again. And you know, there's a lot of people, but I think that the point you made about the investment in Sittingbourne, you know, despite all this uncertainty, you can still find huge investments, like the one at Sittingbourne, like the one local at the Ashford Designer Outlet, 80 million quid, and that's in the retail sector, you know, which, you know, because it's a different trading model, so obviously it works in a different way, and that's why it works, because it works differently.
That's a really good case study as well, isn't it? Because, you know, commercial property funds are hemorrhaging money at the moment because investors are drawing money out of them left, right and centre. I mean, it was all in the news again today. But, you know, because they're worried about, you know, the state of the high street and retail commercial property and premises. But here we have an out-of-town outlet centre in Ashford that's just invested, did you say, 80 million, did you say?
I believe it's 80 million, and it's been built, I understand, on budget and on time. And it has a particular marketing proposition, and you know, put the business mentor hat on. A lot of what makes things work is actually knowing who your target market's going to be, and exactly how to talk to them, and then how to get them to respond.
Shopper experience, we were talking about before we came on air. You know, it's not a question of walking into a shop and buying something and walking out again. It's, well, actually, let's go there for a day because they've got a climbing wall, or they've got a virtual reality, you know, whatever shop or whatever it happens to be.
I think the designer, it's a good example. They've built, I believe, it cost half a million from their corner sensory wall, and I've taken round it, and it's quite fascinating actually. You just touch walls or stand on things, and laser lights start appearing, creating pictures and so on. And apparently, it's phenomenally been really well received. It's you know, it's getting lots of social media exposure. A lot of families are going there and spending more time in the outlet in total because of that experience. And very true, the experience of shopping is where things are going.
Yeah.
And perhaps they've got more resources to do things like that, perhaps, than the high street. But the other end of the marketplace, of course, if you look at places like Whitstable, which is held up as a success in terms of being independent stores, looking at target markets which are slightly different, and then that works at that end. So I think it's the same with a lot of marketing, actually. Mm. If you're stuck in the middle somewhere, you're sometimes with no real proposition.
No man's land.
Yeah.
That's a good point. But make no mistake, I mean, the outlet centre, like any other, big employer of people that aren't specifically trained to do a particular skill, will really struggle to find people to work in those shops in the current climate, because, you know, those people, I think, you know, Ashford is one of those areas where there just aren't spare people hanging around looking for jobs. You know, we are at full employment, and you know, that's a big issue for businesses that want to expand. Where's that workforce going to come from?
Yeah, right. Ooh. I think over the last four people that we've employed this year, they've all come from somebody else. It's not somebody that's unemployed. They've all come from a different practice or a different admin experience. So there isn't people just sitting there waiting for a job.
No. And of course, that drives is increasing cost. Because if you get people
moving between businesses, salaries,
you end up paying more. And we've just done a load of research down on Romney Marsh to do with a potential skills hub down there, which I might touch on later. But we talked to a number of hotels, one or two in Folkestone, and they were telling us that basically, you know, the chefs, for example, which are in dramatically short supply in the whole catering industry, they're just up bags and leave for an extra grand a year.
Mm.
They're earning tons of money, 50, 60 grand sum, apparently. Mm. I don't know. Mm. I'm just told. But it's the whole question. If there's a shortage of supply of particular skills, then people will move around and they will ask for more money.
Yeah.
And so it drives business costs up.
Mm.
Now, the question is, how the heck, what do you do about that then?
Mm.
And it's all the strategies that Miguel's already described, isn't it? It's about making it a great place to work, you know, and being part of a big team and making people really feel rewarded and so on.
The problem with the government's kind of, you know, the current government's, up until Friday at least anyway, they may continue, but the current government You know, views the future as a sort of points-based system like they have in Australia. But, you know, that's a kind of a generic kind of, you know, one size doesn't fit all, I'm afraid. You know, we've got pressures on the health service. You know, we've got pressures in the agricultural sector. You know, you can't have a one-size-fits-all solution. So then you start writing exceptions to it. And then you think, well, you know, where does it end, you know? So it's not an easy one to solve, is it? I mean, you know, clearly, you know, there has been some concern, I think, you know, about the levels of foreign worker immigration in this country. But the reality is that's what this country's economic powerhouse was built on in the past. And if you try and turn that tap off completely, you know, where does it kind of leave us with businesses like, you know, cooks in Sittingbourne that need to find 80 people to work on a production line to pack ready meals? Where are they going to get them from?
Well, and as Terry alluded to get those 80 people, I don't know what the time scale is, but when it opens, it's going to be fairly short, I would think. They need to be in place.
Yeah.
So to kind of grab those, if there aren't all these people sitting on a dole queue, as it were, to grab them, they're going to have to pay above the going rate, I would think, to try and nick them from somewhere else.
Yeah, and then that business has got the problem, you know. So it's not easy, is it? Everything is connected these days.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
You can't just kind of compartmentalise things and put them in a box and say, right, that's the problem over there, and it doesn't impact anything else. So, but great news, Brian. What a great, you know, what a great story.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? You know? It's nice to have a happy one, I think.
Yeah.
There's another one that's along similar lines, I think, is many people will know the infamous Hythe Imperial Hotel.
Infamous?
Well, it's the only thing I ever hear mentioned in Hythe, to be honest. Okay. So is there anything else there?
Famous, not infamous.
Well, I don't know. You don't know what I heard about it, do you? So it's infamous in my mind.
I tell you what, but I'm saying nothing. I regularly meet clients at Hythe Imperial Hotel.
Oh, well, there you are. There you are.
In a darkened room with the curtains shut. Yes, that's why it's infamous.
No, we won't cast asparagus over such a thing. So, but basically, that's a very old building. It's been there some time, isn't it?
And quite imposing, isn't it, on the seafront there?
Yeah, it may even be. I'm not sure if it's listed, but if not, it's close to, I would suggest. But they're planning a fairly ambitious extension that, okay, big deal. You know, I hear some people say, but basically it's going to be very modern looking. It's going to be two-story glass fronted building to the west of the hotel, which is very kind of out of character with the existing building. So the more details on the plans are coming out now. There's going to be an outdoor swimming pool. I think that's fairly brave and ambitious.
It'll be heated.
Yeah, that'll be used for 4 days a year then, so that's good. So an outdoor swimming pool with a decking area. There's a spa treatment area, a bridal suite, gym, etc., etc. And I'm just thinking that these plans are now available to have a look at. And so there's a need, there's a demand down there. They've done their due diligence, I'm sure. So I'm just wondering to what kind of extent local residents or local do-gooders are going to say, oh, no, that's out of keeping with what it is. And how long is it actually going to take to kind of get it through? And I think it's, you know, it's a dilemma, I think, as progress against trying to keep the tradition.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I would hope that there isn't too much red tape that gets in the way of that one. I think, you know, the Hythe Imperial is another example of a business that's invested, you know, year after year in, you know, upgrading its facilities and rooms and spa and everything else. They've ploughed an awful lot of money into it. So, you know, again, without those kinds of forward-thinking businesses investing in the future, where would we all be?
Yeah, I agree. So,
interesting point about Folkestone is that apparently recently they were told they're the fifth most visited town for weekend breaks and things in the country now.
Was that this year?
This is this year.
Yeah.
And basically they're growing their sort of profile and exposure. there's a apparently a plan going into place now where the actual branding will be looked at, not a new brand, but basically the way that they market the town. And obviously one of the key sectors that the local authority there are looking at is actually tourism, is tourism and visitors, the visitor economy. And you know, a development like that sounds like a real draw to get people down into the area, because they don't just come for a wedding, they might stay for 2 or 3 days before and go on further down the coast and look at other things.
Well, I think the Hythe Imperial is more Hythe, but you're absolutely, you know, than Folkestone, but you're absolutely right. And I think there is a revival in our seaside towns, and my God, it's taken a long time to happen. But yeah, it is happening. It's you know, Ramsgate was on the telly the other night because of its lights in the harbour. You know, all the boat owners sticking lights on their little boat ships in the harbour, which is fantastic. You know, so it's got a name for that.
No, we'll put one oar in, yes, because there's plenty of investment and things looking at in Folkestone, but it needs to spread into other parts of that that part of the county. I mean, Rye's also doing extremely well as a town, and, you know, there's lots of arts and culture, same with Folkestone, and the digital economy is slowly growing in both areas. The bit in the middle is when I sort of hail from the Romney Marsh, not originally, as you'll tell from the accent, but where I am now. And basically, we just need some of that to spread across the marsh. And there are some thoughts and ideas on how we might do that. And, you know, because the marsh itself has lots and lots of things you can go and visit, not just a power station, you know, but lots of things there. But it's good to see that both sides of that area are doing well. And there are some seaside towns that aren't actually doing that well.
Yeah, of course. I mean, infrastructure plays a large part in that. You know, there was talk about the development of Lydd Airport, you know, down where you guys are. That hasn't happened for one reason or another. Manston has now been, is about to be turned back into a commercial airport after we get over this lorry park nonsense next year. I think 2021 it's going to be reverting back to an airport. There's talk about a new rail station going in at Manston, which will cut the journey time into London. All of that infrastructure needs to happen so that people realise there's actually an alternative, you know, to working, living and working in London. You know, that's what we need. We need to bring all of those skilled people down so that the businesses follow suit, because that's the only way it's really going to happen, I think.
Well, it's surprising. The number of people in the Marsh Network, which I sort of lead at the moment, that actually have done that. They've been and worked in London and they've decided it's just not for them anymore.
You know,
I've done it.
Yeah, we've all been there and done it.
You know, get out of bed at some strange time in the morning and sort of get back at some very strange time in the evening. My son still does it. He works at BT. And, you know, enough's enough. And then you look for something alternative and you save the £5,000 season ticket and maybe start your own business, or maybe go and join another local business, which really you can get take less salary, but by gum, you get better quality of life.
Yeah, I quite agree. Would it be rude of us not to discuss what's coming up on Thursday, do we think? I think we should have a...
By all means.
I think we should have a sweepstake, shouldn't we?
Go ahead.
On what we think the outcome is going to be. And because I thought at one point that the way it's going, we're actually going to end up with four parties all getting 25% each of the vote. And it'd just be more calamitous than it is now, basically. But I've kind of moved away from that a little bit,
I think you're absolutely right. I think there might well be four parties that get 25% of the vote. But I think, you know, the reality of that means that three of them will probably get together and form a coalition government. And I think the three that are the most obvious are the Lib Dems, the SNP and Labour, because they all want the same thing, don't they, ultimately? You know, Labour want a second, or have promised a second referendum on Brexit. The Lib Dems don't want Brexit, so they're going to have a second referendum. And the SNP, all they want is a second referendum on Scotland. So they seem to be natural bed partners to me, and the Conservatives are kind of fighting the lot of them.
Well, that's an interesting take, and it does actually make some modicum of sense, I have to say, now you've explained
it. I'm not trying to sow any seeds in people's minds here, by the way, because I'm not necessarily saying that would be the best outcome, but it seems to me to be a perfectly feasible outcome.
Yeah, it does, rather, doesn't it? I mean, I know the Lib Dems that I was thinking at one point that, yeah, you're speaking quite a lot of sense and they could get the highest amount of votes they've ever got, or since they were in power in the 30s or whenever it last was. But basically, they have just vowed to stop Brexit, full stop, haven't they?
Via a referendum, though, I think.
Oh, really?
I don't think they would just...
just stop it. No,
actually, their policy is to revoke Article 50, which effectively stops Brexit.
Right, so, exactly.
If you revoke the Article 50, which is the original vote, which we was taken in Parliament to activate Brexit.
Because it's funny, since right back to when we started this show, and we've joked quite a bit about it as well as spoke seriously, but I've always said when it was delayed, I've just said it'll be delayed another 3 months and then we'll get to March and it'll be delayed another 3 months. Basically, it is not going to happen. So we could, as joking as I was, we could actually be veering back to that of it not happening then, couldn't we? Yeah.
But I think, you know, if you are a Remainer, you know, you have a clear choice, don't you? You know, you can vote Liberal, you can vote Labour,
So it's going to dilute those votes.
SNP, none of those parties want Brexit necessarily.
Boris is the only one that's vowed
They're the only party out there that are saying Brexit.
What about Nigel's independent thing?
And if I hear get Brexit done one more time... I mean, honestly.
I tell you what, Marty, what a great piece of marketing. Only because, look, you remember the phrase.
Yeah. Yeah.
So for the wrong reasons. It back to marketing, whatever the reasons are, you remember the phrase.
What's your view, Miguel? You're the most sensible one in here.
For me, what I try not to do is look at parties. I know that sounds a bit weird, but there is a great website called Policies Not People that puts all the parties' manifestos into one and just lets you pick what you like. And at the end of it, it'll give you a score saying, based on what you said, you're leaning towards this party and then you've got some percentages to other parties. Mm. And I've done it myself and I sort of knew where I was going with it, but it did highlight a couple areas that I thought, actually, I would never have thought of even considering that as a vote, but it's come up.
Mm.
And to me, that, because depending what you read, where you read it, how you read it, it's always leaning favourable to somebody else.
Mm. Yeah.
Well, at the moment, the Conservatives are ahead in the polls, aren't they? But I think we saw from the last election, you know,
didn't mean a lot.
Well, the exit polls that they were doing on the night meant absolutely nothing, did they? You know, the end result was something that nobody had kind of predicted, you know. So,
yeah, I mean, I looked at it quickly this morning, not because I was coming on the show to something boring git this morning, just wanted to look at it on the BBC website. And the gap still remains about the same. And what's happening is that both parties seem to be on polls, that is, gaining share, that's Conservatives and Labour. The gap between Labour and Conservatives remaining about the same. Mm. And the Liberal Democrats, with their clear message, are dropping out of sight. They're actually going, the graph is showing them
doing this.
The Brexit Party is doing the same over the past 2 weeks. Mm. Whether it's people crystallising their positions as they approach the election and choosing, I don't know. But no, I think actually the Labour Party's policy officially is to still have another vote and therefore potentially have Brexit.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it's
a second referendum.
It's an option, and I'm not saying I support either way. It's not going to say where I go today. Mm-hmm. But basically, it's an interesting scenario. But I think the point that Miguel made earlier is about this uncertainty. Mm. That there's a lot of business investment is on hold. Apparently, I heard a report last week, $160 billion or something, is waiting around the corner. Well, I think that was probably Tories saying that, but it doesn't matter. There's still a lot of money hanging around the corner. And as soon as people know, any business will react. Most businesses, the big ones, have already planned for Brexit anyway, three times. Mm. So basically saying it's now a shock, you know. But there are a lot of smaller businesses who really don't know what's going to happen. And they need people to get it sorted.
The slogan we need, actually, is not necessarily get Brexit done. It's get Brexit done or not done.
But get it sorted.
But, you know, just get something.
Just make your mind up.
Agreed.
Make a decision. That's it.
We're either in or we're out, and now we can move on. That's the key thing, isn't it?
Whatever way it goes, at least then it's certain. And then people now can put plans in place, move forward with it. The world's not going to end, right?
No.
I mean, I do find it strange you get people talking about this. I do find it strange you get people who've been saying, well, the supply chains will collapse in a heap on the 2nd of February or something, you know, so making all the motor cars across Europe on an integrated, just-in-time platform, and all that's going to stop on the 2nd of February. No, it's not. You know, businesses like the multi-million-pound car businesses are not just going to stop overnight. They've already got plans to deal with it.
But I think the message we should end on, because we do need to move on, is whatever way you vote on Thursday, it doesn't matter. It's your vote. Absolutely. Use it. Nobody's going to think badly of you because you voted one way or the other. This whole kind of Remain Brexit kind of conflict that's being created is a complete nonsense. It's up to each of us individually to decide how we want to vote. And nobody can... And nobody has the right to criticise you on that basis.
Oh, isn't he lovely and cuddly, eh? Isn't he lovely and cuddly?
So go out there and do it. And whatever you decide is right for you, ultimately. So, I think what we're going to do, Brian, is we need to talk to Miguel after the break because one thing's for certain, and that is that, you know, the world will keep turning and we will all keep paying tax, but we all want to pay as little tax as possible.
Yes, we do. So let's have a musical interlude.
We will come back after this.
You're listening to Kent Biz Connect. Tweet us live at Kent_biz.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's 1 for you, 19 for me. 'Cause I'm the tax man.
For those of you of a certain vintage, you may have recognised that song as The Tax Man by the Beatles. And I think they wrote that song when they were being penalised about 99p in the pound back in the, when would that have been, 60s, 70s, I guess?
I guess late 60s, yeah. Early 70s, yeah. I would have thought.
Which
yeah.
would be a hard pill for anybody to swallow, I think, wouldn't it?
It seems somewhat harsh, I would suggest.
A little bit
I wouldn't be comfortable at 99p in the pound.
A little bit over the top. No reference intended, by the way, to the upcoming election on Thursday. We are remaining completely impartial today. But, Brian, why did we play that song?
Lord only knows. I was going to ask the right same question, to be honest. It's usually my choice. That one wasn't. But we'll leave that one there. But, yeah, it's The Tax Man, wasn't it? By the Beatles.
Right.
Whenever you think of The Tax Man and all the fears that he beholds, you also think of Miguel from Blue Rocket, because he's the man that'll keep you out of trouble, the tax man, I think, and probably limit, best as he can, your liabilities.
Miguel, Blue Rocket, MD, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you here. It's fair to say, I think, that Blue Rocket aren't just a firm of sort of compliance accountants. Obviously, you do that work, and you're very busy doing that work, and your team is at the moment, in particular, with kind of year-end for a lot of businesses happening at the end of this month. But you're much more of a sort of business strategy kind of advising firm. Tell us a bit more about that. I mean, in relation to tax, for example, business strategy more generally. What's that all about? What do you get involved with there?
Yeah, we get involved with a lot of aspects of business. Just to clarify, the song was The Tax Man, but we work for you as business owners, not The Tax Man.
Not for The Tax Man,
yes.
There's
a message out there somewhere that says accountants work for The Tax Man. We don't. We work for you.
Absolutely.
We've got your best interests in heart. And tax is a big part of that. But as you rightly mentioned, that compliance services they're getting completed because they need to be legally. Mm. But what most businesses need is more information to help them grow, to succeed, if that's what they want as well, because some people don't. They're happy where they are. But if they want to go further, then that's where the tax planning comes in. So a big tip on tax planning is you should be doing it within your year instead of waiting past your year end and trying to go back, because of that just eliminates 99% of the things that you can actually do.
Mm. So is that the inherent problem, you think, with compliance accounting, the fact that it's done as late as 9 months after your year end, in hindsight, and actually there's nothing you can do about it because you've already spent the money somewhere else, or you've already done stuff that prohibits you from then going back and turning back the clock?
Well, exactly right, yes. And you're right, statutory information is out of date. And from any point of view, just trying to make management decisions or tax planning, it's far too out of date.
Yes.
And I always try and refer it back to, if you go for a doctor's appointment or you've got a sprain on your foot and you don't treat it, and you wait and wait and wait, and then it turns into a fracture.
Mm.
That's the whole point. And you go to see the doctor, and the doctor says, well, actually, if you come to me when it was a sprain, we could have done a lot more to fix it.
Mm.
But now, your only option is crutches and a cast. Mm. Off you go.
Business grants are a great example of that. Apart from the fact that they're always very poorly advertised and nobody knows about them because they're not allowed to spend money advertising them. There's some logic there somewhere, I'm sure. But, you know, you have to apply for a grant before you spend the money. Well, if you've gone and spent the money and actually there could have been a grant for it, it's too late. So,
yes, yeah, one of the best kept secrets, isn't it?
Yeah.
And there is a lot of incentives out there that business owners aren't missing on. And you'd be looking at things like commercial properties. You'd be looking at things like research and development.
Mm-hmm.
And research and development doesn't necessarily have to be lab coats and test tubes. It can be, if you're doing something new and you're making a progress in what you're doing and it's slightly different to somebody else, then you may have a potential claim there. And it is just a quick 10-minute conversation to establish it and then see if it goes further.
Capital allowances, I guess,
exactly,
are another one, aren't
in
they?
There. And then even talking about grants, if you're looking at purchasing something over 100K, there are specific grants out there for it, which is going back to the funding from HSBC.
Mm-hmm.
Funders are willing to lend, but to strong businesses who can show that they're actually on top of their numbers, they have management information, and that they're putting it together.
Mm. So the point there is, you know, you need to have an ongoing conversation and relationship with your accountant throughout the year, monthly preferably, with monthly management accounts, and then perhaps a meeting quarterly at the very least.
Yeah, and it all depends on size of business, right? You're not going to be doing it if you're a subcontractor for a larger contractor. It's not necessarily needed. But it's what are your plans for the business? Mm. If it is to go get finance or a partial exit or a sale or whatever it's going to be, then the sooner you get somebody on board helping with those things, the better. And it's just, it's also what we can do as accountants is we benchmark you, which is the supply my business offer we've got at the moment, which allows us to benchmark your results to others in your industry.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not to show the main point of it is to highlight any opportunities. And it's to say, actually, we are not in your industry, but these are what the numbers are telling us from people in your industry.
Mm-hmm.
And if they're doing it, why can't you?
There's
got to be something there.
I mean, that leads us on to this whole area of the kind of the value add that you provide, quite often free of charge at your own time and cost. So we'll talk about the benchmarking report more in a minute, but I know you've been running some lunchtime seminars as well called SOAR, which is, tell us a little bit more about that.
So SOAR stands for Set Objectives, Achieve Results. Cash often gets blamed for the biggest failure of business, and it is, but it's like pneumonia, right? So you get something, but then it's the common cold that actually killed you at the end of it. So cash is the common cold at the end. The pneumonia is lack of planning, in our opinion. If you've not got plans in place to where you want to go and you're not monitoring it, how can you make those decisions going forward?
Mm.
And that's why the introduction of cloud accounting, Making Tax Digital, to us is a glass half full, because of now you're being forced to have your information up to date, at least on a quarterly basis if you're VAT registered.
Mm-hmm.
And it's making you see your numbers more regularly and not getting past your year end, in some cases 9 months past the year end, and thinking, oh, what actually happened there? Or those numbers don't reflect reality. We can fix those problems as we go. The key message really is, from our point of view, is that we know numbers, and that's what we're really good at. So we can spot numbers, we can spot trends. Yes, we can give suggestions on how you can build your customer base or some points of marketing, but our key strength is financial numbers. And I think that's where a lot of mismatches, where it goes as well, because of a lot of accountants in our position do fall into or try to fall into the business coach aspect as well. But we're not doing that. We're saying this is what the numbers tell us.
Right.
And this is what the numbers tell us are possible. Mm-hmm. We're not your marketing expert. Mm-hmm. We're not your digital marketing
expert. And frankly, business owners aren't numbers experts. So, you know, in the same way that need marketing people and, you know, they need people like you to help them with that, obviously. Yeah. But doing it at the end of the year or actually, you know, 9 months into the next year is kind of a bit of a pointless exercise.
Well, I think the ICAW said that if all airplanes use the same reporting modules as a business, they'd all be grounded. There would be no flights.
Yeah.
Because it just doesn't work. Yeah.
So let's kind of pull that to pieces in a bit more detail. So SOAR, which is set objectives, achieve results presumably. Yeah. So when we talk about, you know, the S in terms of setting objectives, I mean, a lot of business owners, I think, are kind of put off by the idea of business planning.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything that perhaps in their view entails. What does, on a very basic level, what does setting objectives actually mean?
So essentially, it's picking the key areas of your business. And if I was to break it down into three areas, it'd be what's your underlying success drivers? So what are the things that happen every day in your business that need to happen for it to work? Mm-hmm. Then you'd have your sales drivers and you'd have your cost drivers. It doesn't have to be your 78-page business plan it was a little while ago. The business plans we generally put together fit on one page.
So those underlying key drivers that need to happen, what would be an example of that?
Team
in
happiness.
Right.
Customer happiness.
So staff turning up to work.
Well, or being happy, generally. Because if you think about it, if you've got a happy employee or a happy team member, they'll go that extra mile, they'll stay that extra 10 minutes, they'll come 5 minutes early, they'll prevent problems before they actually happen. If you've got someone that's unhappy, they're just... The mood will spread.
Don't care as much. Yeah.
So that then leads to a question, you know, what do your staff think about the business? What do they think about, you know, the management of the business?
Yeah, exactly.
What's the perception about the business within the business? That's quite a big question, isn't it? That could be quite frightening for a lot of people.
And it leads on to, do they understand the values of the business? Mm-hmm. Do they understand the strategic intent of the business?
Right. Are they part of that?
In my opinion, they should be, yeah.
Yes.
Because of without them... nothing works.
Yes.
Mm. And we was talking earlier that it is an employee market at the moment if you're looking for a job. So there's other things you've got to do to keep people there. Mm-hmm. And as soon as our happiness score drops, then we look at it and say, actually, what's actually happened? Where are we going for it? Because we do it anonymously and we get scores. Mm. They pop up randomly each weekend, each week to see where people are.
So that's people. And then the next one was sales, you mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So in the context of what? I mean... do you need the amount you need to sell each week or each month to break even?
It's a bit of both. So most people would look straight at their sales cycle and say, okay, so where are my leads coming from? What are my conversion rate? What's my average fee? What's actually working? Because by doing that, we're breaking down each area and saying if we can improve each area by 1% instead of trying to improve the whole thing 10%, you can get different results from it. So it is looking purely at sales and seeing what's working, what's not, and where it's coming from.
So breaking that sales data down into, you know, leads conversions.
Leads is the biggest thing, because if you don't have leads, it doesn't filter through.
Yes.
And then so networking is – so every business should have at least five ways it's generating leads. Mm. So for us, it would be referral marketing. So we're going to be looking at asking our clients for referrals. Mm. So there's two types of referrals. For us, clients for referrals. Mm-hmm. But we also have introducers that refer us business. So this is other business coaches, this is bank managers, financial advisors. Mm-hmm. You also have then the digital marketing. So that is a big area which I claim not to be an expertise at. And even when I get my monthly reports, I still don't know what they mean.
Yeah, yeah. So, but at least you've got report.
I just say, is it good or bad?
Yeah. Yeah,
that's what I want to know.
All you need to know is, Miguel, that your money is well spent with me. That's all you need to know. And Morton Waters, so you're no doubt tuned in as well.
But you get a feel if it's working, but I'm not a digital marketer, so I don't know what I should be looking at. And to be honest, I haven't got the time to go look at it and understand it and then do
the analytics and
And then you have offline. A lot of people forget about offline, which to me is crazy, because they'd rather send an email than meet somebody for a coffee.
Right.
To me, that just doesn't work. So you do need to have that face to face.
Face to face.
Especially in this digital world. meeting
whether
somebody.
That's, it's very noisy.
Whether that's at a networking event that Brian or Terry run or, you know, wherever.
And then we're sort of starting to go back to direct mail campaigns.
Right.
Because of people tend, if you do it in the right way, and there are some techniques you can use with it, but they tend to take more notice of that than an email.
Yes. Well, it's funny, isn't it? Because everybody, you know, the cut-through used to be the kind of the terminology when I worked at Unilever. And, you know, I remember we had a huge sort of front door in the office where we would stick stuff through the letterbox, you know, all together jumbled up to see whether or not our, you know, direct marketing stood out from everybody else's. Well, it's almost the opposite of that now. Nobody's sending any, so now's the time to start sending.
But that's one of the tricks, right? I always get told it needs to be quite small because then when it's on a pile, it's at the top of the pile.
Yeah. I mean, all the nonsense that, you know, Royal Mail and people like that used to tell you about door drops and,
I think it's more targeted, though. That's the thing, more specifically targeted.
There's not blasting it. It's got to be targeted.
Yeah.
But... again, these are not my areas of expertise. No. This is why I use advisors to bring in and help.
So that's sales.
Yeah.
So we had people, we had sales. What was the next one? Costs. Ooh.
So where is your money being locked up?
Have you got a handle on cost?
Well, so you're going to have projections, or you should have projections for cash flows, but you're going to be running out of money anytime soon. There's no point asking for funding when you need it tomorrow, because that's when people say no. So you need to know well in advance.
Speaking from a position of desperation.
Is your money being locked up somewhere? So is it being held by your customers? Is it being held in debtors?
Right.
But there's also something called work in progress. So this is basically uninvoiced sales. So is it taking you a long time to raise invoices after a job and sending it out? Because that's the first point of call. If you're not sending your invoices, then you've got no debt. If you've got no debtors, you've got no money in the bank. And the motto we would always say is that a sale's not a sale until the cash is in the bank.
Yeah. Right.
And does stock fall into that category?
Slow moving stock, definitely.
Why are you holding £100,000 worth of widget X that you only sell two of a year?
Yeah. And the conversation and then we do stock turnover ratio to see how quickly you get rid of your stock.
Yes.
And that sparks quite a bit of conversation because people, I don't think we hold it on to that long. It's a recognised formula. We're not just making it up. But this is what the numbers are saying. And there sometimes is a valid reason. They could have just gone and purchased a load of stock 1 week
too
before.
Too much.
Yeah. Mm. 1 week before the year end, so the stock is massively higher.
Right.
But it's having that question asked to you to think, is there an issue here? Should I be looking at it?
Yeah.
Which is where then we come in by looking at the numbers and saying, this doesn't look right. Or compared to others in the industry, you're a little bit higher. What actually happens?
So it really is about sort of picking, picking to pieces the various elements of an individual business, from people all the way up through, you know, process and physical kind of stock and invoicing and all of that stuff. It's you really get to grips. You get to sort of the nitty gritty of understanding a business in its kind of individual component parts, which quite often business owners just aren't in a position to do because we haven't got the time or we're not skilled in a particular area or whatever.
And I think what our quick thinking is set up to do is always think about sales, always think about money in the bank, always think about profits.
Yes.
But what we should be thinking about, so the more logical thinking, is actually how do we get those sales?
Yes.
How are we getting money in the bank?
Yes.
How is the profit being generated?
Mm-hmm.
Because if we get those right, then the key results will just happen.
Yeah. I mean, simple value segmentation and things like that, I guess. You know, the top 20, the middle 50% of your customer base and the bottom 30%. And do you treat all customers equal or, do you prioritise the mid-value customers because you want them to be high value?
And that all comes down to a marketing strategy, doesn't it? It's basically saying, where can we get our biggest return from the investment that we're putting in for it.
So that was all of that was the S, was it?
Well, that's set objective. It's a bit over. So achieve results is once you've got your plan in place, you're going to set targets.
Right.
So targets usually come from one of two places, plus or minus 3% from the previous year because it's an easy way to do it.
3%. Is that where most businesses kind of
set their stall out? Add a random percentage sort of on.
Tends to be double digit, doesn't it? In my experience, it's 10% is the kind of the starter for 10. And then that's
easy to work out.
Then right, that's kind of, you have to manage that number up, and then they manage a number down, and you agree so it's 15 in between or something.
But exactly. So there is no, again, there's no logical thinking behind it. We're just saying we want to do this.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, your example, Brian, of the company in Sittingbourne, they've gone on record as saying they want to double their business in the next 5 years.
Yeah, they have. Yeah.
So that's 100% growth in 5 years. That's 20% year on year, you know. Very ambitious.
Is it? If you're scaling it across, if they get 50% growth in year one because they've got a new premises, then it's not that unachievable.
No.
So it's then going back and looking at where what the actual numbers
are. Starting points as well, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly. Exactly. If they've got the orders are ready to fulfill the capacity, then
so that's the kind of the O of objective setting.
Yeah, so that's where we would then get the benchmarking as well, because of a lot of people that you speak to, they're like, well, we don't know what it could be,
right?
And that's where the benchmarking says, actually, sales growth in your industry last year, the highest was 37.5%. So,
or your business is static, but actually, last year it was a declining market.
Well,
so you're bucking the trend. Exactly. You're actually doing quite well.
Yeah. So it will compare your sales growth to what the average is, what the best is in your industry, and then you can see if you're bucking the trend or if you're a little bit off it, or actually you're way off it. Yeah. But that then gives you just a little bit more logical thinking behind why you're setting those targets.
And then you get all sorts of interesting stuff coming into the mix, don't you? Like, you know, well, if actually the market trend is sort of -5, -10% growth, and you're +5 or you're static, you know, there might be some businesses out there that are prime kind of takeover targets for you.
Yeah.
You know, that's a great way of growing a business, isn't it? Just go and buy someone else's customer base.
Well, exactly. And I think that's happening a lot, even in the accountancy industry with cloud accounting, and there is a massive change. Mm. There's a lot of consolidation going on. And if you can grow, in some industries, if you grow 5%, that's amazing because their industry is static, like you're saying. But so it's understanding that, because of having a not thought of target can impact in many ways. One is, if it's too high, then it's unachievable, and that just damages morale, and going back to the underlying success drivers, people won't be happy.
And I guess also it probably flags up the fact that, you know, a lot of people think they're in, you know, in this type of business. That's the marketplace we're in. But through your benchmarking, you can actually probably quite often say to businesses, well, actually, no, you're in this market.
Yeah,
that's really the market you're competing in, not the market you think you're in.
Yeah,
because it's not about a product necessarily.
and that's what we was touching on before with the outlets, wasn't we? Saying having something that makes you come there for a day out.
You're in the customer experience marketplace,
and then
competing with cinemas, competing with, you know, the fact that there's loads of retail outlets there is kind of almost, you know, secondary.
Yeah. And then so that leads on to the R, which is results, which is basically just reporting it. So actually getting it reported as early as possible after the month end, and then having a discussion about it.
Right.
Saying, okay, why did we do well? Why didn't we do well? Mm-hmm. What's our actions for the next month? The key there is doing it monthly early on. So then any actions you do put in place actually have an impact at the end of the next month.
Yes, yes. And you've got to be able to measure it and report it is the key thing. Wow. So, I mean, that all sounds incredibly valuable to me. What's the kind of biggest barrier with people actually just kind of picking up the phone and saying, do you know what? I really like the look of your free benchmarking report and meeting and analysis, Miguel. Can we sit down? Why don't people do it?
I think it's one of two. One is time.
Right.
So if people are working their business, they're generally busy.
Yeah.
And the other one is it might not be what they want. Mm. And that's the other thing. People have different success drivers.
Right.
Success is different to everybody, isn't it? So
it might be more of a lifestyle business proposition.
Mm. Yeah.
You're kind of you want to maintain where you are rather than perhaps, you know, think about, you know, going into a higher orbit, as you would call it.
Well, one of the biggest jumps in any business is taking on your first employee.
Yes.
And it's amazing how many people are nervous or anxious about that step, just taking on their first employee, because now there's somebody else to worry about.
Mm.
And immediately in their minds, it's, I need to pay them first. I need to pay them first. I need to pay them first. And what that does, that breeds inefficiency, because actually you was there first, so it should pay you.
Yes.
And if it can't afford to pay both of you, then there's something not right in the business.
Mm.
But if you're waiting 9 months after your year end to get your information to find that out, it's too late to make a decision.
I think one of the biggest untapped areas of economic growth potential in this country isn't necessarily new business startups. It's existing business scale up, isn't it? That has to be the kind of the opportunity. If you've been around in business for 3, 4, 5 years, then, you know, you're clearly doing something right. It's how do you then take that business to the next level that's going to have a kind of a GVA, gross value add kind of benefit for the wider economy? And that's the kind of the hardest bit, I think, for many businesses in many ways, isn't it? How do you take it to the next level?
And it's if they want to, is the thing. But taking it to the next level is definitely, because there's a million ways to get it wrong. But yeah, which is why you need to plan it out.
Yes.
Make sure you've got the right people around you.
Yes.
So that you can then start to grow. And
put the thinking time in, you know, with someone like yourself, before you go and commit to building a new plant or expanding, you know, when you can't really afford it from a cash flow point of view, you know.
And it's all good getting the finance, but if the finance, so we're talking about, but if you get the finance and it's only putting a plaster over the problem, it's not a good result.
Yeah.
Just because you've got the money in the bank now, because you're going to have the same problem X amount of months or X amount of years in the future. Right. So you need to fix the root.
So we need to kind of draw the interview to a close, because, I mean, we've just been talking for nearly half an hour, believe it or not. I mean, it's incredible, isn't it? So for businesses kind of who do want to take their business to the next level, assuming the dust settles at the end of this week, which I'm sure it will, going into sort of post-Christmas euphoria, how do people get in touch with you, Miguel? How can I say to you, you know, Miguel, I want you to come in and spend some time in my business and help me kind of see the wood for the trees. And what's the best way to do that?
Just pick up the phone and give me a call. Drop me an email. Details are on the website, of course. But that it's really just the whole point of what we're trying to do is be the accountant that you can speak to.
Yes.
So pick up the phone.
Yes.
Give me a call. We'll arrange something and then we'll take the steps from there.
So the website is BlueRocketAccounting.com. .com.
Yep. And the telephone number is 01322-555-442.
Brilliant. Now, I won't put you on the spot about your Twitter handle, because I know you're not a digital marketing person.
I mean, it's at Blue Rocket
ACC, isn't it? Yeah. So you're on there as well.
Yeah.
But I mean, I think that's, you know, that's the beauty of what you're all about and what, you know, what Blue Rocket is all about. You know, you just said, pick up the phone or send me an email and we'll get together. It's as simple as that. And there's no obligation there on either side. You know, let's have an hour together. You know, let me spend a bit of time understanding your business. And we'll go from there.
Yeah,
so what have you got to lose, really?
Well, there is
a message.
Yeah.
And he'll buy the coffee, I can assure you. Yeah.
Oh, well, even better. Superb. Miguel, thank you so much for coming on the show. It's certainly given me some food for thought. We tend to be, I think, as business owners, very insular in our kind of in our thinking. We think we know what we're doing, but in actual fact, what you really need is another pair of eyes. A lot of the time, that's the reality, isn't it? So thank you so much for coming on and sharing that with us. We're going to play a little bit more tunage to introduce our next guest, Terry. We couldn't find anything even remotely tenuous to introduce Terry, but as Terry has worn his Christmas jumper today, we'll play some nice Christmas music to get us all in the spirit.
Let's kick off the festivities.
Here we go.
Outside is frightful, but the fire is so delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought some corn for popping. Lights are turned down low, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. When we finally kiss goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll really hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm. The fire is slowly dying, and my dear, we're still goodbying. As long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Doesn't care by the fire's cozy glow. He don't care about the cold and the winds that blow. He just says, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Let it snow.
Ooh-wee, goes the star. Why should he worry when he's nice and warm? His gal by his side and the lights turn low. He just says, let it snow, let it snow.
I don't care.
Outside is frightful, but that fire is delightful. Since we've no place to go, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow. It doesn't show signs of stopping, and I brought lots of corn for popping. The lights are way down low, so let it snow, let it snow, let it snow,
let it snow.
When we finally say goodnight, how I'll hate going out in the storm. But if you'll only hold me tight, all the way home I'll be warm.
Well, Brian, that's more sort of your vintage than mine.
I'll tell you what, that is double proper cheeky, that is. You like... chose that one as well. What's the matter with it? I always do the music, unless it's the last one. I've let you do it.
I love the classics. You've gone and done. I love the classics. So who was that, anyway?
Oh, it's Frank Sinatra,
Frank
isn't it?
Frank Sinatra, Let It Snow.
Let It Snow. I mean, well, I don't want it to snow.
No, no, nobody does, really.
It's a nuisance.
But it just seems sort of, you know, it just seems very festive, doesn't it? And, yeah, it kind of makes you feel... warm all over, but anyway, we don't need to do the link here because there isn't one.
Only to Terry's jumper.
Terry Botfield, welcome to the show.
Hello, Martin.
Hi, great to have you on. Terry, I know you wear lots of hats and obviously look, you've got a Christmas jumper collection as well to match. But just give us a very quick overview of everything you do in terms of the Marsh Network and networking in Rye and the Romney Resource Centre, and you work as a business coach as well. So just give us a quick sort of overview and flavour of all of that, if you can.
Oh, blimey. OK, how long have you got?
That'll take up the rest of the show.
That'll take the rest of the show. No problem whatsoever. Actually, a bit of background might be something. A couple of years ago, I wasn't extremely well. I couldn't walk around a lot. But so took a complete sort of sit-down and review of what I was going to do, basically, about 2 or 3 years ago, and decided a rough plan, which I think I'd recommend to anybody, really, as a mentor. That is, where do you want to be personally and what do you want to do personally? So I kicked off and said, I want to do about a third of my time running my business mentoring business, around a third of the time giving back in some shape or form, and a third of the time, as you will well know from the golf day, playing golf very badly or going on holiday. And basically, I'm in a position where I can do those three things. So as a result of that, I took a look.
I think Miguel and Brian have got something in common with you on that last point.
What, playing golf very badly. Well, most of us play golf badly. Why not? You know, just get it out there.
Except him.
Apart from him, you did say you actually won some trophy with a hangover, didn't you? The other day? Yeah, well, there you go. So basically, the mentoring business has been going now since about 2013 when I retired the second time. Having retired the first time in 2004. And, you know, it's been going about 6-7 years. I only work with around five or six clients at a time because it's about a third of my time. A lot of those clients are businesses with less than 50 employees. And what they say they get from it, which is interesting, is they get a feeling of having someone there to hold them accountable. So Miguel quite rightly talks about having a business plan. And by the way, like him, I do not believe, having worked for Royal Mail Group, having to complete a 120-page templated business plan from one of the large consultants, never in your life again, I said, Terence. So my business plans, I work with the clients, are probably no more than 4 pages of grid at the absolute maximum. That includes how you're going to do it. So, you know, one of the big things that I find small business owners tend to worry about is, you say business plan, turn around and run a mile. You know, I mean, I don't mind. Start with the back of a fag packet. Let's at least know where we're going, with some objectives and why you want to get there. And so the mentoring side of it is growing more than the coaching side. I do a lot of coaching-specific projects, yeah. But basically, my clients mainly want me to turn up. And the first thing we do is look through the numbers. And we're talking about small businesses here. We're not. the numbers from the spreadsheet, basically. And I actually help them to put spreadsheets together so you can actually just insert it once a month when you get your top line figures and then see the trends and all those things and graph it if you need to. And the first discussion we tend to have is, how are the numbers? How's the business going? What's changed? What are the drivers? Using one of your words. And then basically talk about what the plan looks like and where we're going. Yeah, do we need to tweak it, change it? And the plan's based on the on two simple questions, really. And I'll move on to the Marsh Network. And the first question is, when I sit down with a new client or even just my exploratory meetings, where do you want to be in 3 years' time?
Yeah.
And where do you want to be in 12 months' time? Yeah. Because actually sometimes you need to do 12 months' work to get you where you need to be in 3 years' time, get the foundations in.
Is that a difficult question to answer in my experience? I think that is a fairly difficult question to answer. Brian, is that a difficult question for you to answer as a business person? Do you know where you want to be in 3 years' time?
Yeah, I think it's probably slightly easier for me because of where I am, not only age-wise, but just generally in life. I've kind of, I wouldn't say I've had my day, but in many respects, I kind of have. I mean, it's really a lifestyle business that I do now, and I'm doing it purely because I enjoy it, and I enjoy helping other businesses as well.
Right.
The pressure isn't really on me to grow the business. Mm-hmm. I don't want to double it or treble it.
Sell it for millions.
No, because in a lot of respects, I couldn't actually do that because it wouldn't be the same business anyway. Yeah. Yeah. Because you'd need 30 meetings, and I can't run all of those. And if I'm not running them, then it's just not the same thing.
So
anyway,
because of your life stage, you're much clearer than perhaps. I mean, Miguel.
Yeah, I don't actually need to do it. I do it because I want to, so I don't have those pressures and stuff like that.
Are you clear, Miguel, in terms of where you want Blue Rocket to be in 3 years' time and what that looks like on a personal level? And
yeah, I have a three-year plan broken down into a 12-month operating plan.
Mm-hmm. Good, good. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Miguel is considerably younger than us. Yeah.
But it didn't. When people think about plans, you know, the automatic assumption we made there in the discussion was that in 3 years' time, people should be showing themselves growth and progress and all sorts of things. Mm. Not really. Mm. I mean, you can have a 3 year plan which says, I'm going to consolidate.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm still going to be in business in 3 years' time. Mm. And to do that, I need to do lots of different things. So if you do the same thing for 3 years and never change anything, your odds are you're not going to be in business in 3 years' time. Mm. So it's not just about growth. So the first myth in this sense is that a three-year objective has got to be something where it shows dramatic growth or profit change in profit.
It's a very good point, actually, because you're back on me in 3 years' time, I'd like to be exactly where I am now, to be honest, with three very good meetings in the places that they are, probably with some different people. And
in Cyprus.
And I'll probably still just about be here in 3 years' time. Maybe in Cyprus a little more often than I am now. But
the critical question, really, I think the small businesses or business owners need to ask themselves, and by the way, I also work with charities, and charities have got lots of challenges as well at the moment, but the principles are the same, is having decided, and by the way, it does take a long time. You can talk for 3/4 an hour to an hour to get to some kind of definition of those two sets of objectives. Mm. Those overarching objectives. Mm. That's how long it takes. Because I say things like, do you mean it? Are you sure? Mm. You know, really? You know, and just to double check. Because then the next question is the killer question, really, which is why? Mm. So having said that Blue Rocket needs to be whatever you want it to be in 3 years' time, the question is why? Because if the business owner... Because the business owners understand their own motivations to why they want to get there. And it's not always money, by the way. I've yet to find one client that's only motivated by return in terms of profit. There are lots of other personal reasons why people do it, because they're proving... One guy I worked with a few years ago was proving... He came out of corporate business, and he said, I'm going to show those buggers. They told me I could never run my own business. Mm. And that was one of the main driving objectives, that particular...
Money's just a means to an end, isn't it, in many ways.
Mm. There are lots of others. So if you identify, if you like, your personal motivators as well as your business objectives... And I couldn't agree more on the planning front, because how the heck are you supposed to... It's like getting on a train, you know, you want to get to Manchester. Mm. And if you don't look up the timetable, you don't know which station to go to, you don't know what time the train's leaving, you don't know when you're going to get there.
Yeah, it's unlikely you're going to get there.
And by the way, you don't have to have, say it again, a 75-page business plan. plan. Mm. As long as you've got something which sets your overarching direction for 3 years, which is the 3-year strategic thing, to use the garble, if you like, for the business, and you've got a 12-month operating plan which gets you to the base point where you know it's really going to work, and that's fairly clear in terms of short-term objective, what you're going to do, why you're going to do it, how you're going to do it, and with measures in place, as you were saying, Miguel. That's all you need, and it doesn't have to be. And most of my clients have all got these plans now, but they're not a huge reams of paper.
Right. Let's move the discussion on now from business coaching and planning and strategy and everything else, because you mentioned the word charity.
I did.
So I know you're one of the trustees of the Romney Resource Centre.
No,
is
I
that
chair
right?
the board of the chair the okay. board of trustees.
Chairman of the
chair
board.
Chair the board. Yeah.
So what is the Romney Resource Centre? Where is it, and what does it do?
Well, the charity is in New Romney. Which is in the middle of Romney Marsh. I don't know if people know where the Romney Marsh is. It's somewhere between Folkestone and Hythe and south of Attridge. Loads of sheep. There's also 42,000 people down there, by the way. So, you know,
is there really?
Oh, yeah. So you do have population on the marsh.
Nice golf
course. There you go. There's one or two nice golf courses that are very difficult to play. Anyway, the Resource Centre's core business is about supporting 16 to 19-year-olds who come from challenged backgrounds, who probably wouldn't be at school. You know, and traditionally, perhaps when 16 was the age to leave school in those days, they would have gone off into the youth or somewhere. These days, people have to stay in educational training till they're 18, and we support them. They are from challenged backgrounds, so they need a lot of support, a lot of sort of specialist services. And our role is to actually make them really more confident, in particular, about where they're going in their lives. And, you know, we obviously have to do some education as well. Of course we do. And the education is involved, quite rightly, around English, maths, IT and other areas. But the objective is to turn those lives around and give them lots of confidence and move on, and some great success stories. Mm-hmm. The charity did win, in fact, in November, have you ever heard of a company, an outfit called Collier Ferguson, who are the largest charitable provider and giver in Kent? And in fact, the Resource Centre won the Best Charity of the Year award in November, which we're extremely proud of. And so we do a lot of good work down there.
So you're a physical centre.
Yeah.
You're a physical building. What do you actually do on the premises then?
Well, I say we deliver the learning. So
right,
the young people come in
it.
And they come in on a daily basis, and they have lessons. We take them out to businesses. Mm-hmm. We take them out to other experiences. We've managed to get ourselves a bus recently, which, again, we bid for. There's lots and lots of places, by the way, to go for charitable support if you've got a business in that kind of area. There are lots and lots of potential funders, and there is some money around in that area. And backing up what Miguel was saying, there's also lots of grants around which are flying around at the moment, which people don't know they're there, to your point. So, you know, we do that. We take them out. We actually provide an overarching experience. We also provide for adults over the age of 19 with their English and maths and confidence building. But our plan, with support hopefully from other institutions locally, is to create a skills centre, because the area is nominally a deprived area, but let's not worry about that. Mm. Hate that description. Mm. But basically we want to match businesses on the left-hand side, if you like, with employees on the right-hand side, and people who want to go and work in various ways, and provide them with the skills and match the two together.
Yeah.
So we've been running research projects, and we're doing the second phase in Jan to March.
It is weird, isn't it, how... I don't know why, but certain areas have a sort of stigma attached to them. You know, like people talk about Fannet with an F. Of course, it's not spelt that way, but that's how it's pronounced. You know, and automatically, you know, people are bracketed as a certain type. You know, people talk about Sheppey in the same way, you know, and it's very, you're automatically sort of on the back foot. And I think the Marsh, again, is probably one of those. But I know some hugely successful people that have been, you know, grown up on the Marsh. I mean, Jackie Offen at J&J Systems, for example, who I know really, really well. But, you know, they run a fantastic IT support business just outside Canterbury. Jackie grew up on the Marsh, you know. I mean, it's just nonsense, isn't it? This kind of stigma and kind of prejudice, depending on where you come from.
The guy that owns these studios actually started his radio station on the Marsh, would you believe, Mr.
Right.
Andrews.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can actually grow from there. It has the power station down there, which is obviously a vast employer. But you've also got other other successful businesses like the Romney Hythe and Dymchurch Railway, for example. Very successful organisation.
Well, Alison Gordon running, you know, a sort of drop-in computer shop, you know.
So there's a lot going on. There's a lot of potential down there, and we hope to get a lot of investment into the area, and the Resource Centre hopes to be one of those organisations that helps to get the community and business together right across the spectrum, even older people engaged as well. Because whilst it's lonely running a small business, I tell you, if you're 55 plus in an area and you're on your own, living in isolation, the stress and strains of that, because the charity we support through the Marsh Network, which I'll move to in a minute, is called Calm, which supports people over the age of 55 who live in isolation. And I won't bore you with too much data, but if you are on your own and don't get out the door, about 25% of those people never speak to anyone for a month at a time with a meaningful conversation. A month. You'll say hello to the postman.
A long time.
That's all you'll do. And a lot of those people, actually, the younger end of it, are economically inactive, as it's called, and I hate the description, but they mean they have things, they can go back and give back to the community. They can either work or volunteer and engage and make a big difference locally as well as to themselves. But again, it's making the opportunity available to do that. And that's one of the things we plan to do. The Marsh Network, I'll quickly move on to, because it links to it all. When I first moved down from Ashford down to Romney Marsh about 4 years ago, I thought, I was quite used to going networking in Tenterden. I was part of the Wealden Business Group, for example, and did their marketing. I was engaged in a number of Ashford business groups and down at Folkestone. And I looked around and I said, OK, I need to go networking, because to me networking is critical, the face-to-face element that we discussed earlier. There was nothing down on Romney Marsh. I mean, nothing. So I thought about it a bit. Okay, if no one else is going to do it, I think I'll do it. And
I remember when you and I had a meeting at the Ashford International Hotel. It seems like yesterday, but it wasn't. It was a couple of years ago now.
Three years ago. And actually, because I do what I do, I thought, well, just don't assume that there's a gap in the market. Because I always remember someone saying to me, I think it was an infamous friend again, who said, because there's a gap in the market doesn't mean it actually works. Someone's probably tried that before and failed.
And not, yeah,
and
quite.
So basically I thought, and I was told by local businesses, it ain't going to work. We've tried all this stuff before, it won't work. So decided to approach it with a plan, would you believe? And did a 6 months' worth of preparatory work, which involved talking to influencers like the man on my left, the infamous meeting, spoken to people like the local newspaper, spoken to local politicians and so on, and actually got an input from them as to the best way to do it. Support in the sense that they would use their social networks to promote when we did it. Went and nicked a few ideas from a group I was part of in Rye, which is basically around benchmarking what worked at the time. They were getting over 40 people to every meeting. That group then all the way downhill. I've just taken over, but that's another story. And basically planned it all out. And so we planned it, we launched it, and we've now been in place for about 2 years, just over 2 years. We've expanded it from one monthly coffee meeting to a breakfast meeting as well, and recently expanded it to the same coffee time type meeting in Rye. And we're now getting around 20 to 25 people to the coffee meetings and around 12 to 15 to 18 on the breakfast meetings. And the principles are very simple, and I think you'll recognise them. It's about networking. No membership fees. You won't like this one, maybe, but no membership fees, no joining fees. Okay? And the reason why I do it is part of my giving back. And also it gives me all the leads I need for my own business, so I basically don't have to do a lot of marketing. So in one sense, it's a marketing tool, but on the other sense, I actually really enjoy giving back. I love doing the meetings. It's like doing a performance sometime, you know, and I love doing that. And we basically network, as you said. When people turn up, networking for half an hour, maybe 40 minutes. We do the 60-second round the table bit, which is I'm trying to encourage people to not just pitch their own wares, but actually listen very hard to other people around the table and say, who can I go and talk to afterwards and work?
Try and help and add value.
Help and value and advice first, and that kind of stuff. We support each other. Then we do a quick 10-minute speaker at the coffee meetings, order a quick update on what's happening next. And then guess what? Just pack up and go back to networking. And people love it. They call it, well, you've been down a few times, they see it as professional, well-organised, relaxed, you know, and people can actually get on with talking and doing business rather than other things. And that seems to suit the people that are coming. And they also come for a social reason as well, a lot of them, you know. And we
people
do get
are able to be themselves, aren't they? That's the thing that strikes me about the meetings. It, you know, you don't have to pretend to be something you're not. There's no pressure to be, you know, someone or something. You're just there to have a conversation.
And as I say, the people come along, there is a core. You might say, how the hell do you fund it? Well, we just charge a fee. About a third of the money we're getting goes to the charities. We support two different charities, one in Rye, one in Rye. A third goes to the venue, and they very kindly, the venues, the Singport Arms and the Shipping at Dymchurch, and then the Kingshead in Rye. They don't charge us on a per-head basis for anything. We literally agree. We just split the money three ways.
They provide the refreshments,
mm-hmm. the coffee, tea, biscuits, drinks, etc. And then the other third, we put towards running the group. And, you know, you think about the time it takes to market it and the printing and everything else. You know, all that.
It
just about covers the costs. In fact, it probably doesn't cover the costs. But it's providing that platform. It's got a Facebook platform, which is...
Yes.
Quite active.
Very active, isn't it?
It needs to be more
active. Your BBN group, Ryan, very active.
It is.
The Marsh networking.
Yeah. It's not as active as it could be. Between Ryan and the Marsh one, there's 520 signed up Facebook members. Now,
that's really good.
What we've got to do is get a larger number of those people active. And I'm not a digital marketing expert either.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes.
Engaged.
Yes. We need to get them engaged. Okay. So, but what we've got on the Marsh Network is we have everybody's email address and they get regular email bulletins. Mm-hmm. We need to do the same.
Which is fantastic because it just lets you know the next meeting is happening then, book on here. And that's what I use as my kind of vehicle for promoting you on our platform.
And I test it sometimes. I actually send more emails out than I mean to on purpose sometimes, some months, just to see what the list, whether it makes a difference or not, whether people come back to me and say, stop bloody sending me emails. Last time I did it, it actually picked up about four people coming to the meeting 24 hours before the meeting. So to me, it's provoking. The early adopters of booking on early and scheduling, and a lot of people do that. Some people just leave it to the last day or two because they need to find out what their diary's doing. And some of them, I've forgotten that. I'm going to go, you know, and so they book.
I have mixed views on that myself, but I can see.
Yeah.
We've now got. Trying to achieve. You've gone into Rye, though, recently.
We have gone into Rye.
Which is great, and that's exciting. Yeah. So you're into East. Because it's East Sussex, and where you are in Kent on the Marsh, it's kind of, they're natural bedfellows, aren't they?
Well, they are, but people.
In terms of area.
It's interesting. We used to have very few people crossing the dotted line between Kent and East. I find that bananas, when I say so.
Yeah.
So one of my missions is to get that dotted line rubbed off the map. But basically, a lot of it's driven by the fact that funding for businesses is done by. Celep region, and the Celep regions have a dotted line between Kent and South and between East Sussex, apart from some which are across all of Celep. So basically, it identifies being in East Sussex or in Kent.
Yes, yeah.
But the time between New Romney and Hastings is about 40 minutes. So it's less time it would take me to drive up to a meeting in Dartford.
From
where I am. So, you know, we're trying to promote that. So anyway, it's the Rye one's working. That was launched with 28 people, I think. I think it was 24, 25 there last time. It turns over, and that's the way people want it. They seem to want to keep it going this way. And it generates new people coming along and a bit of a churn. There's a churn there, as there always will be. But from that, we're planning... Have you come across the cashless society yet? Because we do cash on the day, or you can book in advance or whatever. And then people were turning up with no money in their pocket.
I've never got any cash on me, I have to say.
So never, I had to get modern.
I think I'm the only one that uses your card machine.
Well, yeah, so, I mean, it's, yeah, yeah. So, it was.
You're a cash man. You've always got wads of it, haven't you?
Well, like Terry says, we used to be. It's still not 90, maybe 80% of people pay cash on the day, and a lot of people pay by backs. The only thing, and I don't have a problem with that. The only thing I like them to do is do it before the meeting, not as they're walking through on the day or. Afterwards, because of the admin involved, and excuse me, as Miguel said, it really is can't beat and join them. A couple of months ago, I invested in a credit card machine, so as a kind of it's third choice last resort. People can do it on the day.
Well, what we've done
in Miguel's case, it suits him. That's fine.
Yeah, we've got a website called themarshnetwork.co.uk.
Yes, you have.
And on there, you can book in advance, and you pay through. We use Stripe as a payment mechanism, so there's a small booking fee. It's a lot less than Eventbrite, a small booking fee, and people are increasing now. Well, I think it's getting to the stage of probably about four or five people a meeting are actually paying in advance and prepared to pay a booking fee rather than worrying about bringing cash in on the day. So we had to move with the times.
Right.
So the plans for expansion are there. So we're looking to expand further next year with all sorts of activities.
So on that note, because we are coming to the end of the show, believe it or not, it's just flown by, You've got a meeting this week, haven't you? Down on down in Rye, I believe.
A meeting,
it's
a
Rye
week,
networking.
A week
coffee.
Tomorrow.
Week tomorrow.
The King said the Rye networking over yes. coffee. Mm-hmm. Lovely coffee there, by the way. You know, it's an upmarket pub chain. It's really good with bedrooms there as well. Mm-hmm. Really good venue. Yeah, we've got a meeting there.
So it's marshnetwork.co.uk.
Yep,
marshnetwork.co.uk. You can find all the information.
That's the meetings.
There.
If you want to get hold of me and talk to me, because I sit down with anybody like you do and have a free cup of coffee for an hour, we'll argue who pays for it, a couple of hours if needed, to purely talk about anything you want to talk about to do with your business, holding it, growing it, and that's at botfieldassociates.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And they're the two main websites.
And the Romney Resource Centre has its own website if you want to talk to Terry about getting involved with that as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, we're always looking for supporters.
Yes.
You can pay £10 a month. Mm-hmm. You can become a supporter of the Resource Centre,
mm-hmm.
and have your logo on there and all sorts of other things. And if you would like, if you're an accountant, well, you're a long way away. If you're an accountant, or you might want to become one of our trustees. I'm looking for some trustees at the moment as well, with a sort of company secretary type, accountant type, professional type background. So if you're out there mm-hmm. and you want to give back mm-hmm. to a really deserving cause that wins charity awards, yeah, get hold of me.
Perfect. Terry, for now, thank you so much for coming on the show. Miguel, thank you also for coming on the show. Mm. I'll see you at Brian's BBN on Thursday at Dartford.
BBN Dartford on Thursday,
which
yes.
we look forward to, the last one of the year.
It's mega.
We hope everybody gets out and votes, whatever your political inclinations are, on Thursday. And we look forward to seeing you on the other side of all of that on the 6th of January when we'll be back for our first show after Christmas.
It is. We've got a four-week break now instead of the usual two.
But for now, thank you so much for listening, and we're going to play you out with this.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
Merry Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time of the year. With the kids jingle belling and everyone telling you be of good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. It's the happiest season of all. With those holiday greetings and gay happy meetings when friends come to call. It's the season of all. There'll be parties for hosting, marshmallows for toasting, and caroling out in the snow. There'll be scary ghost stories and tales of the glories of Christmases long, long ago. It's the most wonderful time of the year. There'll be much mistletoeing and hearts will be glowing when loved ones are near. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
Channel 2 Talk.